so we will be busy. And the first one is Bruce Anderson. Representative Anderson, are you here? Mr. Representative Anderson, this is an expansion of the lease levy. If you would like to explain your bill, I don't.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have with me several testifiers that would like to, and may have spoken on this bill before. We had this bill, members, in past years for the Wright County Technical Center in Buffalo, and there are other technical centers throughout the state that are in a cooperative type basis whereby they help out member schools, like in Wright County, the member schools like Buffalo, Maple Lake, Monticello, Howard Lake, Waverly, things like that, where they come together in a cooperative way and use their general fund dollars to help the technical center to continue operation, but allow for students to come and have technical hands-on type training through the technical center, and that way the schools themselves allow these students to get that type of introduction to carpentry, agriculture, horticulture, a cross gamut of many different things. And what we're asking here, and we asked last year, was that the school districts, because of the financial crisis that are in them right now, are using their general fund dollars to help the Wright Technical Center continue to operate. And they're finding themselves in a financial crunch to the point that when they go out for a referendum, levy referendum, and ask for dollars from the public, they're not including with that the dollars needed to keep the technical center, and yet they want to continue this, and so they're asking for a different way of being able to fund the technical center. And without going into too much detail, I think, members, you have a detailed bill summary from the House research and from your committee research people talking to you a little bit about what happened here. And what they're asking for is to allow that when schools go off for levy, to allow the technical center to have dollars set aside indiscriminately, I guess, discriminately, I guess, to say these dollars are going to be used for the technical center, and they do not have to come out of the right, out of their general fund dollars. And so we're asking for an expansion that's in session right now. And I have with me Mr. Gary Wilkes, who is the director for the Wright Technical Center, Miss Marsha Ziegler from the St. Michael Albertville School System, and Jeannie Holland, also from the St. Michael Albertville School System, to just give you a bit of a taste of what they're asking for, and we'll stand for questions afterwards.
Representative Anderson, we do now have a quorum, so I will move House File 234 before the committee, and that it be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And would you like to proceed, sir?
Thank you very much, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Wilkes, right?
Yes. Representative Sikora, I appreciate you and the committee listening to our testimony. My name is Gary Wilkes. I am the director of the Wright Technical Center. Representative Anderson has been very supportive of our request, and that is what you see before you in House File 234. Each of the eight school districts that form the Wright Technical Center have formally adopted a resolution in support of our efforts here today. To give you an understanding of who I represent, I'd like you to know that the Tech Center is a cooperative for career and technical education, for alternative education, and for other such odds and ends, if you will, that it makes sense to cooperate to do, such as, for instance, interactive television and other instructional issues. The center is 45 miles west here in the town of Buffalo, and we have a resident student population of about 350 full-time equivalent students, but in a co-op, some of our students are there for part of a day. We have three blocks of career and technical education, and then our alternative learning students are there for the whole day. We employ about 40 people and have a budget of about $3 million a year. And the real issue is that the cooperative is out of space. Our facility consists of a 75,000 square foot main building, and we're using literally every square inch of that space. We have another 10,000 square feet that's divided amongst five what we call outbuildings. They're comparable to portables. They're some 20 years old or so, and our students in our construction trades program built them when we initially put them in service. We're using every square inch of those outbuildings, and those outbuildings being wood frame, standard household construction type buildings are in need of being replaced. Also, we're growing. We're in that fourth ring suburb, if you will, around the Twin Cities, and almost every one of our school districts is growing and growing markedly. The co-op added 35,000 square feet of instructional space in 98 to accommodate that growth, but what we did was build just enough instructional space to literally move into, so we filled it immediately upon its availability, and now we're bursting at the seams again. The last thing I'd like to do is introduce Dr. Marcia Ziegler, the superintendent of St. Michael Albertville School District, and so I'll pass the microphone to her.
Welcome, Ms. Ziegler.
Thank you. Just to add to Gary's thoughts, when we meet as superintendents of these other eight districts, and again, perhaps St. Michael Albertville is one of the growingest. If you've done any research on us, we're right on 94, and we are growing extremely fast. And if we would go to the 90 cap, which our district is not at, but some of the other districts are. For instance, Howard Lake Waverly is. So when we're in this cooperative, if we were even going to try to designate some funds from each of us, we run into problems because some are already tapped, and there isn't any room for, as a cooperative, everybody to contribute. Also for us, we have intentionally left some space there because as a growing district, we are again looking at another bond issue to build more buildings. We will be maxed out in our district in another year and a half. So for us, we might have to have some lease levy if it stays. I know there's some changes with the governor's proposal out there, but we have left room in case we would have to have some in the meantime, before we pass a bond, lease some classroom space just because of our growth. So I guess we are here again. We know that this mirrors other legislation for intermediate districts that's already in place, so we don't feel we're adding something different to the agenda than what's already in the current bill. Thank you.
Did you have another witness who wished to speak, Mr. Anderson?
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, the school board member Jeannie Holland is also from the St. Michael Albertville. She has a few words just to say.
Ms. Holland.
Hi. I just want to say that in 81 and 82, I, along with being a board member on both the St. Michael Albertville school and as a tech school board member, I'm also an alumni of the school, and I am a nurse, and can attribute my success as being a nurse from the Wright Tech Center. It's a great way for kids to investigate technical education, and it's a growing market right now, especially in nursing and auto mechanics and some of the courses we offer. And it's really important to be able to, with the shrinking numbers of educational dollars, to provide that for all the kids in our eight-member school district. And so that's why we hope you consider this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Are there any other people out there who wish to testify on this bill? Questions from committee members? Representative Bissons.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First question is to Dr. Ziegler. Dr. Ziegler, living in the city of Jordan, which, as you may know, is combined with Belle Plaine to create Scott West. Can you tell me about STMA's wrestling program this year?
Oh, come on.
We will see you.
Me too.
Yeah. And we look forward to the meeting, Madam Chair. I guess I do.
He has a real question. Oh, Madam Chair, I just had to interject that Scott County West and Malacca face each other Thursday night. So, you know, these two are going to be enemies for a while.
Perhaps you ought to lose and maybe you can get a vote.
I don't think so.
I'd ponder that. thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. I guess one of the questions that we heard in a bill in policy this morning talked about local legislation versus statewide, and you know, kind of rather than time and time again issues specific to areas coming to the legislature, we just set a statewide policy. I can see if the legislature were to set precedent in this area, allowing this for one cooperative, how could then the legislature ever say no to any cooperative along this venture? And so, as to Representative Anderson, have you considered this going statewide and looked at what the possible fiscal ramifications would be in doing so, et cetera?
Madam Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Oh, Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, I have thought about that in regards to opening it up to all the tech centers, because in talking with Mr. Wilkes and the board members from Wright Technical Center in past years, we've heard of other tech centers like this being closed because they don't have the funds, and the member of that co-op are not willing to come up with general fund dollars to do that. And we're seeing the crunch outstate more so than maybe in the metro or the ring collar community. So I have thought about doing that. I've not heard from anybody specifically to ask or have them come forward with the bill, because it went out on the registry and nobody's come forward asking me to represent them in regards to their technical co-op in there. But it's not that we can't think about it. It's just something that I don't know the ramifications or the cost of that going out. And I it'd be interesting to know if there would be negative response from the school districts as relates to that, or from the communities.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this may be to Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow. Is the levy authority they're asking for, is that an equalized levy?
Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, no, it would be unequal.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there further questions? Representative Anderson, can you tell me about how many students the Technical Center serves at the present time?
Madam Chair, I think the number that the Director Wilkes said, 350 students, and that's on an on-and-off basis, because you get some that come in on a quarterly basis. And so about 350, and that could vary depending upon the quarters and the situations at their schools. And there's about 8 schools that send members via bus to the technical center.
For what other purposes does the Wright Technical Center function? What else does it do besides serve the 350 students that were referenced?
Madam Chair, I'll defer that to Mr. Wilkes.
Mr. Wilkes.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I think, like many co-ops, we would be in a mode of a service organization. Right now, our main functions would be to provide career and technical education. We do that through 11 different training options that are available to students. We also do that through the Alternative Learning Center, which is serves a very large geographic area in our part of the state. But at the same time, over time, we have done a number of things that would make better sense doing cooperatively than independently. So we have been into foreign language via interactive television as one, for instance. We have, when it was desirable to be an education district, we cooperated to be an education district. We broadened our partnership out a little bit, and we had 12 different school districts involved in that. And that education district has allowed us to put together a wireless communication system. So at the present time, we have 10 megabits of internet bandwidth, and the whole state's served by Intertech with about 23 megabit. And we are providing that in a wireless mode to all 12 of those school districts. We have built the infrastructure at these 12 district sites. They have us as an option to that traditional hard landline, the T1, that I'm sure this committee is aware of. And so we that is a big boon to our districts, and we're just finalizing that as we speak. And then after that, it's there's a lot of requests at the present time. We're investigating the possibility of e-learning, distance learning, online learning for our member districts. With the co-op, generally we look at areas where each district maybe only has a small number of students that potentially would benefit from the service, and we're able to aggregate those across the 8 districts and provide for our membership through that type of service. And then beyond that, it's the beauty, I think, of the co-op is that we look for what do you need, and that changes from year to year, day to day, and we try and fill that need as a cooperative. Thank you.
Just to clarify, the districts that you work with then don't provide their own vocational technical. They do that all through you.
Generally, the bigger the district is, the more they're likely to have other alternatives in the career and tech area. We try not to overlap. We try not to be redundant. We're pretty good at doing that because we've been a cooperative for about 33 years now. But districts do have their own career and tech ed. As we get to the very smallest, the answer is absolutely none. And they haven't built, they haven't staffed up for it. The co-op is where it all comes from.
Thank you. Representative Clancy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First question I have is, I think, for Greg Coe, and that is a question about how this affects the limits, the levy limits and the targets for this district.
Madam Chair and Representative Clancy, you would, in your packet, you'll see a fiscal note that looks like this, and there's zeros on the front because there's no state aid cost. But if you look inside it, there's a chart on page 1 that shows the estimated amount of levy at about $259,000 per year. And so when you get your levy target, this amount would count against that levy target.
Thank you. Madam Chair? Madam Chair?
Representative Clancy.
I have a question then for the testifiers. How much space do you need to accommodate the program, and what's the current cost per student that the current space is costing? Because I see the increase is going to be $2,250 per pupil. I just want to know how much you're spending per pupil at the moment, and how much more space is needed.
Okay, the current cost per student in an operational sense I can give you as just about $7,600. The cost per square student per square foot type of thing, I'd have to research that. Don't have that kind of a number, if I'm hearing your question correctly.
Representative Clancy.
Yes, Madam Chair, thanks. Then how did you come to the number that's being requested, I guess? If you're not sure how much you're spending now, then how did you get to the number of what you need?
The amount that we're asking would be an amount used for construction, a new space, new instructional space. And the department asked that we be able to put a number onto that. And right now, as I mentioned, we got 10,000 square foot of instructional space that's in pretty bad shape. It wasn't designed or built to be permanent. But to expand upon that, we are looking at an amount that would allow us to replace at least that, and we're busting at the seams, so it would be more than that, I would anticipate. But one difficulty we have is, unless I know that there's some possibility, we're on a pretty tight budget, and I have a difficult time bringing an architect in in order to really flesh out the physical space that we would like to have and then be able to put a price on it. But what we did go by is, as I mentioned, in 98 we had added on to the building. That was a $2 million construction project, and the best I could offer the department was that, you know, if we built about the same amount of instructional space, we might need the levy authority to generate a couple hundred thousand a year. In working with the staff in the House and the staff in the Senate last year, I was advised that it would be easier to approach the legislature with the idea of mirroring what's in current law right now for the intermediate school districts, hence the $2,250 per marginal cost pupil unit, as opposed to introducing a new number such as, say, $8 or $9 a marginal cost pupil unit that would generate about the $200,000 a year that we might use to build. I hope that answered your question.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all the information, and seeing no other questions, House File 234 will be laid over for further discussion and possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you
very much, all of you, for being here.
Thank you, members.
Representative Demmer. Representative Demmer, do you wish to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do. I wish to move House File. Where is that number?
550.
Move House File 550 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. Do you wish to speak to your bill? I see no amendments here.
Madam Chair, if I could, I'd like to do one oral amendment.
Okay.
Get the bill in the shape I'd like it. Members, page 1, line, basically what I want to do is lines 19 through 25, take the levy and divvy it up between the different school sites. I would like to remove that part. And the language we have is on page 1, line 11, delete A. And then page 1, we want to delete lines 19 through 25. That's it, Madam Chair.
All right. Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any discussion? Do you understand what the amendment does? It just does not designate how the levy under this piece would have to be spent. So it doesn't divvy it up to all the different schools. It allows the school district essentially to make the decision. But if there's further questions of Randy Demmer, please feel free to ask them. All right, hearing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
All right.
Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now we can get to the meat of your bill.
Now we get to the bill. Well, basically, it's relatively simple. We have a safe schools levy currently that districts are allowed to use. The bill does two things. It restores the levy authority back to $30 per student. We had it at $30 originally, went down to $27 a couple of years ago. We want to restore that back to $30 per student for the levy. That's one thing. The second thing we do is expand the scope of what the levy can be used for. The levy was designed to do things such as police liaison services, drug abuse programs, drug abuse prevention programs, gang resistance training, school security, other crime prevention, staff and safety, student safety measures. We'd like to include school counselors, Madam Chair, and members in this levy. Now, school counselors are part of a broader group of student support services occupations we have in our schools that are all good and could all be argued to be for safe schools. There are various methods and means that we have for funding these different student support services, and they're all important, and I think they're all good and proper things to be in our schools.
However, this is attempting to take one of those school counselors. One thing I comment on is all the different student support services have some other means, including counselors, can be in certain instances included with a special education levy, for example. But they're all excluded from being used in a levy such as that when they're used for general student population type of things. There's really no other levies other than the general ed levy. And I'm going to make the case that the school counselors maybe should be included under state schools levy, not because they do any more or more important than the others, but because they need to have a spot where we can offer school districts an opportunity and school boards an opportunity to continue with the counselors in their districts in the face of general fund budget reductions. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be open to questions. I think we do have a couple of people who'd like to testify regarding the bill.
If you have testifiers, would you like to bring them up, please?
Yeah, I can take questions first if you'd like, and then the testifiers.
Well, they're coming up. You may take one question. Our first question over here, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer, excuse me. I do have an oral amendment for this bill, and I'm thinking, Madam Chair, that some of the people testifying may want to comment on that as well. So I would leave it up to the author, and I apologize that I just got this amendment right before the committee, so I wasn't able
to. Hold on. You have a written amendment?
I have an oral amendment.
Okay.
And I'm thinking that it would save time and be more efficient for all the testifiers if I offered it now rather than waiting until they had testified and then they didn't get a chance to comment on the amendment as well.
Representative Browning, what is your oral amendment?
Okay. And I would go at the pleasure of Representative Demmer because I haven't had a chance to discuss this with him. But it would be on page 2, line 13, to pay the costs incurred for the salaries and benefits of school counselors, after counselors, and this is the oral amendment, insert nurses, comma, social workers, comma, psychologists, comma, and drug hyphen abuse counselors.
You're going to pay for all these for $30, huh? All right, Representative Demmer, do you have an opinion, I guess, of this amendment?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As I stated, that you know, these are all good and honorable things that we have in our schools, and I think important things we have in our school. And I'm not saying that one is any more important or less important than the other. However, even if we do adopt the bill or lay it over for possible inclusion, it does come to fruition for $30 a student. I'm not sure how many of these things we can fund. And I guess what I'd prefer to do is, if we can, is keep it to the counselors, leave it as it is, and go forward that way. I don't think there's a lot of money here to even do that, probably the way it should be done. But I guess I'd prefer to just keep it that way. I have been in conversation with some folks, some social workers that come visit with me, and they did a very nice job presenting their case, and were very good, Madam Chair and members. But I guess at this point, I'd really like to leave it, if I could, to the original form that it had.
Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer, would you like to have your testimony on your bill as it is, and I offer the amendment later, or would you like me to put it before you now so that your testifiers can also comment on it?
I think it would be best to have it out.
Okay.
To have it out front.
Then, Madam Chair, I would move that amendment for consideration as we go through the committee hearing.
Representative Biskins to this point.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling, would there be anything, if this language without the amendment were to pass, would there be anything which would prevent a school from using the dollars it typically uses for counselors to fund any of these other components and now use the new dollars this bill allows them to access to fund the counselor piece? In other words, it just turns into a shell game rather than having to actually risk all of these up front.
Representative Browning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Biskins, I think anytime you label or name one particular profession in statute, it jettisons up to top priority for those dollars. And of course, there's always a shell game with any funding we give to local school boards or local governments of any sort. You know, what in the, you know, the same, the federal government plays that game with us. You know, what did they give us money for, and how can we figure out ways to use that for that and then free up some other money somewhere else. So that's part of the game, as you know. But I do think that by listing just counselors and then talking about safety of schools, we're ignoring the fact that a lot of the safety problems that we think of with schools have to do with problems that students might have that all the school support personnel address. If it's a mental health problem and a gun has come into the school, social workers get involved with that. School nurses get involved with that. It's not just one or the other profession that's dealing with the safety issue. And in fact, the social workers say that their scope of practice, you know, has more to do with that than counselors. You know, we can let them hassle that out. I myself, you know, would rather that they would work on it together and come forward united for the outcome of student safety instead of one group or another, you know, making an end run without working with the other groups. You know, that's the sort of game that I don't like to see played around here. And so I just strongly support the goal of student safety and us giving the tools to the local school boards to decide what they need in their community without us, you know, mandating that they have to use this fund for one and not another. You know, some communities may not have certain types of problems, and they might, you know, want all of one or the other here, and whereas others have other types of problems. I just think it's a, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of the discussion we had this morning, a local control issue rather than a state mandate, and that's kind of why I'm bringing forward this amendment. If school districts want to pick counselors and use all the money for counselors, because there isn't very much money here, and that's a very good point that Representative Sikora makes, you know, that would be their purview. But we just wouldn't be picking for them is what my goal is.
Representative Demmer, as the author, you may comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to agree with Representative Greiling, except I'm going to point some things out. First of all, this is not a mandate. We're not mandating that school boards or districts use this funding for any certain purpose. We are empowering them to use a school's levy authority, if they would like, toward counselors. The example, Representative Bradling, that you used about somebody coming in with mental health issues, indeed, that school psychologists and nurses would be involved. They could then put that time under, I believe, a special education type of funding category where they would be reimbursed for that sort of thing in statute. So I think there are lots of mechanisms that school boards and districts have to fund these other school support services, which are very important. We don't have some of those things available for school counselors. This does give us that option, which does increase the choices and hopefully increase the school safety.
All right, Representative Klinzing, last question, then we will go to the witnesses.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question. I guess I'll first direct it to Representative Demmer. There is a criteria for the current Safe Schools levy that the levy can cover other crime prevention staff and student safety measures. Why are school counselors not currently considered part of that other? And it seems to me that even some of the things that Representative Greiling listed would also fall under that category. So I guess I'm trying to understand the necessity for singling out the counselors when it seems that they would fit in that criteria that's already established in the statute.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Klinzing, I don't know that I have a firm answer to the question. My understanding is that I've read through some of the statute language and some of the interpretations, and school counselors are considered, I believe, to be educational services available to all children all the time, and for that reason, there's none of these special categorical funds can be used for them. School social workers, psychologists, nurses, they fit special need. They do things with special needs type kids under which a category of funding is available. Therefore, their time spent doing those sorts of things is available because that's categorical. That's my understanding, Madam Chair and Representative Klinzing, of the difference.
Follow up,
Representative.
Representative Demmer, if the intent is to continue to have school counselors service the general populace, then why is this levy being picked as a good place to put school counselors if their primary obligation isn't going to be safe schools? It seems like we're trying to have it both ways of sorts.
Representative Fimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quinzing, you know, I think one could make the argument that any person associated with a school in any fashion is for safe schools, and you could extrapolate what everybody does to be safety of children and doing the right things, and we can find different things that custodians, superintendents, principals, teachers, any of the student support services people do would foster safe schools. I guess that the rationale that I could use for school counselors in particular in terms of the general population, in instances such as disasters, whether they be a general nature such as a flood or a tornado or a family type thing with an individual student, or an individual student type of disaster, suicide or attempted or that sort of thing, you know, everybody has to rally around and there's plans in place. And I would argue that the school counselor's position probably is one of working with the general population with whatever needs that don't neatly fall under any kind of special ed type of things. And again, it's empowering the board to have one other means and one other avenue to keep some school counselors around.
Representative Meslow.
Madam Chair, if I could, and I don't know, maybe this is more general nature, it might be an appropriate time to bring in some of the witnesses. Maybe some of these questions could be directed to them also. I don't pretend to be an
expert. How many witnesses do you have, Representative?
I have two, Madam Chair.
Okay, the two that are at the table.
Unless, Representative Meslow, is your question more general nature that I can handle? I don't want to get too deep, Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer, Madam Chair, I was only going to suggest something that might frame some of the testimony. Not really a question that I would ask you to answer at this time, Representative Demmer. Madam Chair, it's up to you whether you want me to proceed with that.
Go ahead.
As I'm going to be listening to the testimony, I understand the value of the services. I understand how this can fit within this. What I'm going to be particularly listening to is an explanation as to how this is a unique funding source that fits the counselors as opposed to the other support services, or how there are other support services or other funding opportunities available to some of those other support services. I'm confident that this is a good proposal, a good bill. My only question is whether Representative Greiling's amendment makes it a better bill. And so if you could consider that in your testimony, that would be very helpful for me.
All right, then. Representative Erickson, did you have something to this point, or did you want to wait till? All right. Let's hear from your witnesses, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two witnesses. I have Kitty Johnson, who's the incoming president-elect of the Minnesota School Counselors Association, and also, and she's right here, and then right to my left. And further to my left is Colin Ward, who's a counselor and a professor at Winona State University, Madam Chair.
Proceed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. Let me begin by saying I'm extremely nervous because this is the first time I've done this sort of thing. And I do want to thank you and thank members of this committee for listening to our testimony. I've prepared some statements that I'd just like to share with you and then specifically address some of what I'm trying to assimilate as I sit here. I'm here to testify on behalf of the school counselors throughout the state of Minnesota, as mentioned, as president-elect of the Minnesota School Counselors Association. We are also a part of the Support Services Coalition, and we do work hand-in-glove with our colleagues, the school nurses, the social workers, the school psychologists, and we are here today just to represent the school counselors' point of view. And so I thank you for listening to some of what I have to share with you. Like you, we have something in common with legislatures. We manage conflict on a daily basis. There are a myriad of other things that we do as well, but I'd like to frame my testimony specifically along the lines of the conflict management proposed in the school safety levy, HF 550, which is also known to counselors and perhaps others here as the school safety bill. And along with managing conflicts, counselors are also known as people who protect and provide students with safety, as we know our colleagues do as well. But we, I think, do it a little differently. As we look at construction trades, the electrician has a certain job to do, the pipe fitter has a certain job to do, and you wouldn't want one to do the other. So from a counselor's point of view, our safety includes physical safety, and we also deal with students reporting who don't feel safe in schools on a daily basis, if not sometimes on a weekly basis. And we try to develop, and we do develop strategies to help students reestablish a sense of safety. We work with students directly through conflict management in classrooms, individually, and in groups. We try to create an environment within our school where everyone feels safe. Along with the physical safety, we also address the emotional safety as a major component of our work. We've been trained in the developmental model of counseling, and we approach our students' needs and the emotional aspect through this training. For example, a ninth grader's emotional safety may consist of having fears connected with coming to high school from a junior high, whereas the seniors we work with are transitioning and also feeling anxious because they are now transitioning into adulthood. Each developmental level of the students we work with is a major part of our training that may set us apart a little bit from our esteemed peers. We deliver these strategies individually in classrooms as well as in groups. We also work with the other components of the school safety bill and drug prevention. We have a myriad of curriculums that we use, both individually and in groups. Anger management are the mainstay of the work that we do with our students, and we work with students. I've worked with students who are academically at risk. That sets us apart, perhaps, from some of our colleagues in that we specifically deal with the academic piece. We try to find out the number one reason that many of our students are at risk, and this is because of violence being a big part of their lives. And so school safety is really an integral part of everything we do with students. I want to conclude by just saying that we have been trained at a master's level to work with all students K-12 using the developmental model. We have classroom training. Many of us are previous classroom teachers. We are maybe the first licensed professional to see students and their families. We're the first that they connect with, and we help them to develop resources to move towards successful, safe participation in schools. We agree that we are critically important to all groups in creating safe places for kids in schools, but we feel that we don't really have any specific funding that addresses just the needs of counselors. So thanks for listening.
Thank you. And Mr. Ward?
Thank you.
If you could just, you know, whatever she hasn't said, if you could, you know, add whatever comments you have to that, that would be great.
I will. My name is Colin Ward. I'm here in support of this bill. I'm a counselor educator at Winona State University. And I'll briefly outline what I think are important roles of school counselors, just to provide a framework of understanding about that, and use current events in Rochester to illustrate some of the funding demands that are being placed upon school boards that place school counselors and kids at risk. I will attempt to address some of the dialogue toward the end of my testimony to the concerns that were brought up earlier on. So if I don't do that, please redirect me. As a professor, I tend to ramble a little bit. I'll try to keep that short. Counseling services are a necessity in schools, not an extra that can be cut. In the Institute of Medicine recommends that mental health and psychological services be considered mainstream, not optional. And they are essential to enabling many students to achieve academically. Studies have shown that elementary school counseling has powerful and positive impact on student success. And evidence shows that increasing and expanding counseling services is cost-effective and preventative. Furthermore, elementary school counseling services reduces disruptive behavior, increases school attendance, improves student listening, concentration, and study skills, increases completion of homework assignments, and improve student grade. They do not work in isolation. They work in concert with other helping professionals. They provide proactive leadership that engage all stakeholders in the delivery of programs and services that help students achieve success in schools. This mission is accomplished through the design, development, and implementing a comprehensive developmental and systematic program for all kids. They are master-level providers, and their primary goal is to provide enhanced student learning through the academic, career, and personal social development while addressing a variety of issues. In Rochester, for example, counseling issues that all level counselors, elementary, middle, and high school, work with are social skills, behavior, harassment, anger issues, abuse and neglect, divorce and separation, family issues, including mental health, addictions, violence, and transitions, illness and death, academic, moving, and some diagnosed mental health issues. And most of the students that they're seeing struggle with more than just one of these. Issues of violence and safety are at the forefront of our concern. Research has shown that early intervention can reduce the risk of future delinquent, violent, and antisocial behavior, and therefore provide significant gains for students at the individual level and for schools at the community level. School-based violence prevention programs have consistently shown that participants increase their social competence, reduce aggressive behavior, and improve the overall school climate. In Rochester, pre-post studies of elementary school counseling violence prevention interventions have shown for the last 3 years always increased violence awareness and reduced aggressive behaviors in schools while also increasing grades. Here's the dilemma. Within an environment of diminishing resources, school boards are having to consider eliminating crucial-based programs that prevent school violence and a variety of other issues impacting students and their opportunity to learn. An illustration of this is in Rochester, again, that following a discussion upon whether or not to expel three students harboring weapons on school grounds, the school board voted 4-3 to eliminate an entire level of school counselors within their district. The impact of this reduces a connection with at-risk students and community agencies. It eliminates an assistance to students through primary interventions, counseling, group, classroom guidance, consultation with parents and outside agencies. It eliminates comprehensive programs focused on prevention and intervention services that directly impact students, staff, and families. And it also eliminates support for parents. This discouraging irony highlights how districts across the state have to consider the level of education they're willing to settle for. This bill offers school boards like Rochester to access financial support for school counselor programs outside of the general fund. Based on their training, school counselors are ideally positioned in schools to serve as advocates, creating opportunities for all students to define, nurture, and accomplish high academic aspirations. In a time where the Minnesota school ratio to students is somewhere between 450 and 991 to one student, the recommended average is 250, by the way, it is critical to increase the funding opportunities for school boards to support all students by supporting and funding school counseling positions. So I encourage you to support this bill as written. In response to the earlier dialogue, part of what I know to be true is that in the field, school counselors, nurses, social workers, teachers, parents, and administrators all work together. They have a fairly clear idea about their roles in schools. The difficulty sometimes in mental health professions is that although distinct from one another, we also share some common ground. And what happens sometimes in testimony, and having done this before, is we spend more time distinguishing our differences rather than highlighting our commonality. The issue here, I think, is not about how we work together, nor trying to highlight one profession over the other, but how best to fund school counselors when school boards are eliminating them. You can ask your own school board, go back to your own communities, and ask them, what's the funding aspects for school counselors from the general fund? What other critical dilemmas are they having to face in demands and using general fund monies? I think that's the issue. This is strictly an additional option for school boards to say, we would like to articulate school counselors in such a way that we're not having to entirely use general fund monies with regards to maintaining a level of student help that each district deserves in Minnesota. I'll field any other questions, or we will.
All right, we've heard from these two witnesses, and are you ready to push your amendment, or did you want to hear from the social workers first?
Madam Chair, I think we should hear from all testifiers, because I think that
we have two additional people who have requested to testify today. They have just a very brief time. This is only our second bill, members. We have a ways to go yet here today. Who are the... All right. Would you please introduce yourself so that we have a record?
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Denise Herman. I am from the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota.
And my name is Ann McInerney, and I'm president of the Minnesota School Social Workers Association, and I also represent, I'm the convener for the Student Service Coalition for Effective Education, so it's also the nurses, psych, social workers, and chemical health specialists.
All right, thank you. You can share your time whatever way you wish.
Madam Chair, representatives, We would like to speak in favor of the amendment offered by Representative Freiling for the three points being that local school districts do know the needs of their students best, physical health, mental health, whatever those are, that they can best identify what those needs are. That two, then the local district can identify the continuum of services needed to meet those needs, and that would include probably any one of the disciplines, and that, of course, that money is limited so that they are in best to make that decision in terms of using that money. And three, I know that the majority of school nursing is funded through the general education, that when and if it is funded through special education, we are only allowed to work with those students on a very limited basis. Therefore, the majority of work that needs to be done in our district related to the health and safety of students is for the entire population. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. McInerney.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd also like to just point out that we totally agree with this levy and the use of having student support services. I think it just gives districts some local control as to who they want to hire in order to meet the needs of the students in their district. And because we are all, the student services are all trained differently, districts and school boards can then decide upon that training who would best meet the needs of students.
Questions for either of the ladies who just testified? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Jessica Carr. This is probably for Representative Demmer or for someone who would be able to answer. What do you think this would save in the general fund if it now is diverted to levy?
Representative Demmer, would you like to defer to Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom here?
Well, Madam Chair, I think I'll take a shot and I'll stand ready for subject to correction. I don't know if I have a dollar figure, Representative Erickson. I think whatever a school board would choose to levy for a school counselor or for student support services that was previously paid out of the general fund is what the school districts would save in their general fund. And I don't know if there's a way to say what that would be. As, you know, the state schools levy, we'd have to look and see, you know, how many schools are currently utilizing their entire state schools levy. My understanding is not a lot. I probably should have that data, but I don't. The second thing would be is just the increase of $3 probably isn't enough to do a whole lot that you could take a salary. So I don't know if one of the fiscal analysts would have a better answer.
Madam Chair, do the fiscal analysts know how many districts are levying the full amount? Do you know that, Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair,
I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, there's a small underlevy in the state schools levy. It's not very much. It's less than 5%. We'll get that number to you in just a minute here.
All right, hearing no other questions,
oh,
I think.
Sure, I had to.
Yes, I was going to suggest that now we could vote on your amendment. Do you wish to speak to it briefly again?
Madam Chair, I had a question for the testifiers.
Oh, all right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Your question and then your amendment.
Right. The question is for the school nurse testifier. Could you tell us what is the situation with school nurses? Every now and then I read in the paper that they're being cut as well, but I don't know the statewide implications.
Representative
Ms. Herman.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No problem. We just do that so that when somebody plays the tape, they know who's speaking.
Yes. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Representative Brayley. Currently, right now, we, like everybody else, are because of the huge cuts coming to education or the anticipated cuts, are facing shortages in school nursing. I know that in my own district, as a parent, we only have 4 school nurses for 12,000 children, and one of those positions is on the board to be cut because of spending. So what we are hearing from our members, which are 350, over half the school nurses in Minnesota, that we are cutting school nurse positions because of the funding shortages to education.
Actually, I think the word wouldn't be cuts, because you're not getting a cut in state dollars, but because your budgets are going up, your districts are making the decision to...
Correct, yeah.
To cut back on size, I guess you'd say. Representative Greiling, are you ready for I have no other. Representative Biskins, did you have a question also?
No, Madam Chair. It was just a clarification on that word cuts that I needed also. Thank you.
Representative Greiling, do you wish to move your amendment?
Madam Chair, I believe I already did move it.
Okay, you offered it. The amendment is now moved. All those in favor of the Greiling amendment, which would add, let's see, counselors, social workers, pardon me, nurses, social workers, psychologists, drug abuse counselors, to the mix of this bill, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Aye.
Division?
All right. Division. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? All right, it's 6-5. 6-5, so the nays have it. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Demmer, do you have any other comments? Are there any other questions?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
On the bill.
One final comment, if I could. This is a good thing. I'd like to say I feel strongly both ways, and I really do in this case. This is not a win and a lose. I don't think it's a win-win thing. We have a lot of really good professionals working in our schools, and we need to keep as many of those as we can. And this isn't really about choosing one or the other. It's about offering an alternative or another tool for school boards to use, not at the expense of one, but at the inclusion of one. And so, and again, I'd like to remind the members that this is permissive. It's not directive. It's just another tool that school boards have. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 550 be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus finance bill.
All right. The bill will be laid over, and we will move on to, thank you, Representative Gemmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We move on to Representative Newman. House File 692. Mr. Newman, I saw that, Representative Newman, I think you had people here earlier. Are they still here or did they have to go?
They have left, Madam Chair, but they were here unrelated to this bill.
All right, good. I would have felt badly if they had gone and had not had a chance to testify. All right, Representative Newman, you may move your own bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 692 to be laid over to be possibly included in the educational omnibus bill.
And would you like to explain your bill, please, Representative?
Yes. First of all, Madam Chair, members, I want to express the superintendent from Blanco Silver Lake had intended to be here and was unable to be here this afternoon. So I will indicate that if there's anyone has any questions that I'm unable to answer, I will certainly get the question to Superintendent Warner and get an answer back to you. This is a bill that was heard in this committee last year, essentially two components. First of all, there is a waterline service for the Glencoe Silver Lake Junior High School, and they were in the process of doing some work on that waterline and made sort of a business decision that because that water line was not sufficient to provide sprinkler service in the school, should it be necessary, and because there were lead fittings, they simply fixed the problem at the time that they had the water line opened up. And consequently, they felt that they had saved their school district potentially a lot of money by fixing or anticipating this problem and fixing it when the water line was opened up. Second portion of the bill involves damage to their school gymnasium floor, which was damaged as a result of a storm. They did not have any insurance to cover the damages to the gymnasium floor, nor were they eligible for any kind of federal help. Consequently, they want to be able to levy back in order to pay for the for fixing that floor. I would indicate that the school is in statutory operating debt at the present time, and simply they don't have the money to pay for the for these two projects, and they are asking for authority to levy it. And with that, I will stand for questions.
Are there questions for Representative Newman? Representative Erickson.
Chair Sikora, was this included in our omnibus bill last year? Do you remember?
I remember that we heard it.
Madam Chair.
Was it in the bill?
It was, yes.
Okay. That's what I thought. Thank you.
I thought it probably was. I do remember the bill. Are there further questions? Mr. Newman, you are really getting a pass today.
We're making up ground, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your bill will be laid over. And that brings me to my bill. Representative Meslow, you want to sit in over here? Mr. Chairman, I would like to move House File 710, and this is also one that shouldn't take much time. It was heard last year, and it's the one that restores the community ed levy that was cut in 03, and then the accompanying aid. As you can see, it doesn't amount to a great deal of money, but it is there is definitely a fiscal cost to it. And the restoration of the levy is just 73 cents per person. So that's not a very big amount. Rather than me talking, I'm going to let these gentlemen talk. We have Doug Spray, who came all the way from Worthington to testify on this bill, pardon me, Montevideo, to testify on this bill today. And Mr. What is your name again? I never see you around here. Mr. Ray Frost, who came from Chaska.
No. Thank you, Representative Sombra. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be real quick, too.
Ray, thank you.
My name is Ray Frost. I'm with the Minnesota Community Education Association. As Representative Sikora said, I just wanted to reiterate a couple of things and anticipate Representative Biskin's question. This bill was heard in committee last year. It did pass. It was in the House Omnibus Bill. It does restore the 73 cents that was reduced back in 2003. And anticipating Representative Biskin's question, this is not an equalized levy. It is a levy that does have an aid levy mix. It is not on the equalization formula, but does have some aid, so that kind of helps with it. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our testifiers. This is Mr. Steve Kerr, from community director from Anopenican School District. And then this is Doug Spray.
Mr. Kerr, are you going to go next?
I'm going to go next, sir.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
I am, Mr. Frost said, I am from Anopenican School District. I'm a community education director there. I've been in community education for 28 years, and I've had the opportunity to work both in rural Minnesota and suburban Minnesota during those years. We're here, obviously, to seek the support of the restoration of the general community ed levy. And as we sit here today talking about what's best for Minnesota, we talk often and fly at that 10,000-foot level and say what works. And I have to put at least a human face on what community education does, because that's what we're about. One short story. We have a woman who participated in Opehanapin, started participating with us in a choral program, 18 years old. She had Down syndrome, and later died at the age of 31 from heart problems. Our program meant enough to her that her family put her choral vest at her reveal, and our program brochures and the whole works. And later, the family provided a large memorial to support the program their daughter had been a part of. So on a human level, we attempt to make a difference. Community education programs in the state with the general community ed levy spend nearly 70-80% of that general community ed levy on programs that are directed toward youth. The revenue is leveraged, usually locally, via partnerships with various agencies and nonprofit organizations in the community to create $3 of service for every levy dollar that we receive. Community education generally is annually generates somewhere in a million and a half range statewide of youth enrollments and programs. The purpose of it, why do we do it? Some of it is because in our communities, as you well know, as you look at your communities, we have a lot of two-wage earner families. We have some great organizations in our communities who when their labor force, if you want to call it that, the volunteer labor force, returns back to the community after they've worked at 6 p.m. The place where community education serves a role for many of the families in our communities in Minnesota is that 3 to 6 time frame, when many of our children are at greatest risk, exposed to the greatest kinds of problems that youth can run into at that time of the day. That's when many of our programs are directed. As we have seen for years, much of the research has come out that says providing these extended learning and development opportunities supports the educational missions of our school districts. And the success of these children in these activities is supported by these national studies. It demonstrates improved academic achievement, attendance, emotional development, and reduced risk-taking behaviors. As a legislature, you've been faced with many difficult tasks in the last few years to balance the budgets. The general community education levy was one of those cuts, reduced from 595 to 523. I need to give you a reference point, however, in that the general community education levy had not changed from 1988 to 2003. In essence, the reduction of 595 to 523 reduced the funding for the general community education levy to pre-1986 funding levels. Why is that important? I think as we look at some of our community education programs across the state of Minnesota, it isn't the only thing that's been cut in some of these communities. In Anoka Hennepin, I can speak that prior to some of the budget challenges that we have faced at the legislature and the state, we had funding agreements with 10 of our municipalities to provide funding for programs for kids. The municipalities have completely cut back on many of their dollars and cents, and as a result, many of the programs for kids that we have offered over the years jointly with them have been reduced. For us, what that has meant in Anoka Hennepin is a reduction of about 7,000 youth enrollments in terms of the combined cuts of our funding and the state's.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Mr. Spray, do you have comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Doug Spray. I'm the Community Education Director in Montevideo, and it was nice to get out of town today. My superintendent volunteered to run my intramural basketball program, so I'm in no hurry to get back. I've been the Community Education Director for 30 years, and I've seen lots of things happen in our field. Montevideo is a district of 7,600 people, 1,500 students, and like most school districts in greater Minnesota, community education is the mechanism to facilitate most of the after-school programs for youth. This past year, we spent about 72% of our general community ed dollars serving youth. The bad part is that in the last year, we lost 42% of our local funding sources, with the general community ed cut and also city funding. As a result, we've had to cut staff, we've added additional duties to existing staff, we've spent countless hours securing grants and donations to keep programs running, and we've had to eliminate some very important after-school services for kids. To keep these going, we've raised fees anywhere from 15% to 40%, and the end result is beneficial programs for kids and families are being eliminated. Our summer involvement by our youth went down by 15%, and for the year it's down 21%, and that's a negative trend when we're trying to provide opportunities for kids. But what is happening in Montevideo is very typical of what's happening around the state, and here's just a few examples just to give you some idea. For example, in Fairmont, where the reduction in community ed funding resulted in cutting staff, after-school programming has been cut by one-third. Youth program fees have increased about 20% across the board, and participation has gone down 18%. That's a pretty good correlation. In Kimball, where the director is responsible for basically all aspects of the program, 85% of the community ed funds are utilized for youth services. The director has now been cut to part-time, programs have been cut, and fees have been raised, all contributing to fewer youth accessing those services.
in Park Rapids and Alexandria, where the reduction in community ed funding has resulted in higher fees and the elimination of many youth programs and youth service opportunities. In Forest Lake, where considerable fee increases has resulted in some of the youth most needing after-school services being denied access mainly because of cost. Fewer scholarships are available, and a successful after-school teen program for at-risk kids is being cut. But there are many more examples, but basically all the districts are telling us that they've had to increase fees 20 to 50% for youth activities, and fewer families can afford them. They are able to provide fewer programs for youth. They have less staff, which results in fewer numbers of kids being active. Scholarship dollars are harder to find as the demand on charitable organizations continues to increase, and collaborations are harder to create because there are fewer dollars in many agencies who serve youth and families. I strongly encourage you to consider raising the community ed levy back to $5.95. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Spray. Are there any questions for the testifiers this afternoon?
Mr. Chairman, can I make one last comment?
Yes, please, Representative Sikora.
No, this is a program that I've always supported, and we managed to get an increase in funding a few years ago. And I think that it is, for many rural communities, it is the only thing out there that offers a whole variety of classes and theater and music and sports. My children were all involved in sports. You know, they leveraged tons of volunteers. My husband coached soccer for at least 10 years under this program. You know, there's just so many people, and generally the communities and the businesses that I'm familiar with have been very, very supportive of this. And so I would just like to get this little bit of levy and aid back in the program for this coming year so that we can continue to support the kids in the after-school programs, which is so important. So that's all for me. There are no questions.
Thank you. With that, then, we will lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Representative Greiling, I think that brings us to you with House File 148. And it would appear, Representative Greiling, that there is some overlap to the bill that we just heard, but that there are some additional matters that you're including within your bill as well. Is that accurate?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is accurate. And before we start, though, there's an amendment being passed out that doesn't relate to what we're hearing, the portions of the bill that we're hearing today, because we're just hearing the levy portion. But to get it in the shape that I want, I would like to request the courtesy of the committee just to put this on, and it won't be part of what we discuss today. But the bill, Mr. Chair and members, is to restore all the cuts from last year, and these were two that were inadvertently left out in some of the decision-making on my part in the bill being drafted. And so Mr. Strom has kindly drawn up an amendment to complete what I had intended to do.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. I think first we have to make sure that you've moved your bill. I presume you're doing that at this time.
Mr. Chair, thank you. House File 148, and then I would move Amendment H0148A1.
All right. Do the members have any comments or questions regarding Representative Greiling's author's amendment?
Representative, I do have one question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Sikora, I'll be happy to change spots anytime you're ready.
No, you can enjoy it over there. I do want to mention, Representative Greiling, that you know we have a rule for when the amendment is supposed to have been brought to the committee administrator by 5 o'clock the day before the hearing. You did not do that. And this is, of course, just some more restoration of aid. But we will not accept in the future, you know, a long amendment, anything that isn't just a plain old verbal. you know, unless you have it here according to the rules that we've laid out in the committee.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cora, I appreciate that you're going to accept it now, and I apologize for it being late.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I guess that means that I also get to be the soft touch, but when the when the real boss is here, things are going to get a lot tougher. So we'll remember that as we go forward. With that, all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Amendment adopted. Representative Greiling, to your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sikora had such a good idea and a good bill that the first section of my bill is Section 4. It's the very same as hers on the community ed revenue, so I won't go through that again, and I do appreciate the very good testimony for her bill. But what I would like to highlight that was not in her bill is starting with Section 19, and that would be on page 18 of the bill, starting with line 14. And this is the same section that Representative Anderson's bill was dealing with, the building lease levy. And this restores the levy to what it was prior to last session. And as you know, we changed it so that it would be the lesser of $90 per pupil and or the cost of the 90% of the district's lease cost, and this would restore it to $100 per pupil or the actual lease cost of the school, to the school district. And then it also restores the added lease levy available to districts that are members of intermediate districts, again, similar to Representative Anderson's bill, from the current $22.50 back to $25. And this would be about $4 million. And if there are no questions, I'll go on. Should I just go through all the sections, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, then on page 20, section 20, this is the unemployment insurance levy. Districts would be able to levy the full amount rather than 90% of the amount in excess of $10 per pupil. Members will recall that occasionally school districts have unemployment insurance costs that they have to accommodate their budgets for, and this gives them more ability to do that. On page 21, section 21 also, this is the tax levy judgment, and this would be another angle that could help out Representative Newman with his school district. It restores the full levy authority for judgments against the school district rather than the 90% or in excess of $10 per pupil. And then the final section is the state school levy that we just discussed with Representative Demers' bill. And there were several comments made that it's such a small amount. That was part of the argument for limiting the choice to counselors rather than all the school support personnel. So this would help out with that problem by moving the state school levy from $27 per pupil to $30. So that, Mr. Chair, is what I have proposed here. And I did, because of the committee being fairly familiar with these from last year, I didn't specifically decide to take up the committee time with any testifiers. There may be some of the regular players here that want to comment on these, and I would leave that to their judgment.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. And as someone who was not serving on this committee last year, I look forward to any additional history that other people can provide to me. Sorry, where are we going? Representative Johnson. I knew I was just looking around and making sure that I wasn't missing somebody. Representative Johnson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, I was not in the discussion last year either. And on behalf of a school board member from my district, where we do supply all-day, every-day kindergarten for our kids,
I'd like to know, I missed it in your discussion here, is there any way this bill can be construed as supporting broader application of all-day, everyday kindergarten? I was looking particularly in Section 3, because I know a lot of people are really supportive of this program. Can your bill help with that?
Representative Greiling, is that a part of the bill that we were intending to address this afternoon, or...
Well, Mr. Chair, the part that was on the agenda is the levy part of
right.
it, so, but I could just quickly answer if you wish.
Perhaps if we could just answer this one brief question on it, but otherwise if the other questions could focus on the areas that you've addressed, I'd appreciate that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, this bill restores what was cut last year, and unfortunately we haven't increased the all-day kindergarten for a while, so there wasn't a specific cut to it. It was kind of frozen rather than cut. So it's probably like any of the other things that we've discussed. If you have more money in general, then a district has more local control for things like all-day kindergarten or any of those other things, kind of the push down the balloon in one place, it can come out in the other, as we discussed with the state school levy, but nothing in specific.
Are there other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chairman, as well. Just a little historical background, Representative Greiling. Last year in the conference report, the House, that is, we were restoring a lot of these levies, and yet you and your friends here did not vote for that. Have you had a change of heart?
Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, you said in the conference committee?
The conference report.
Conference report. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly to what you're referring.
Actually, it was the House bill on the floor.
House bill on the floor.
Thank you, Representative Secord. Sorry, I'm going to try to keep track of everybody. Representative Greiling, does that help clarify for you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It does. You know, in general, what I was voting against on the House floor was the significant cut for the first time in history of our state to the area of education. I haven't picked anyone's brain yet who recalls that we've ever cut education before. We've had education has been frozen, and education has we've gotten a decrease in what people at the school district expected for our students, but we've never actually cut education. So that's what I was voting against, rather than a change of heart on these specifics.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Nissel. Will Representative Secord yield for a question? Representative Secord, didn't we cover these costs, though, in our House bill as we sent it out? Did we have all this covered?
Yes, actually, all these cuts, thank you, Mr. Chairman, all these cuts, Representative Erickson, were made in 2003, the first year of the biennium, 2 years ago. And then our bill last year restored a lot of the levy, the judgment levy, the lease levy, et cetera. We restored those back to 100%. And we added money back into the reading readiness program. We didn't have a lot to spend, but what we did went right back into education. And the actual cut to education in 2003 was about $125 million out of what would normally be about a $12 billion budget. So none of us enjoyed doing that. But they weren't as horrific as some would make them out to be.
Thank you. I appreciate everybody providing me with some of that additional background. Now I think that's really as far as I'd like to go with that this afternoon. Are there other questions or observations the committee members would like to make at this time to the bill? Thank you. With that, then, we will lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Greiling.
We can.
Unless I missed my mark, I think Representative Slawick, that brings you up. Yep. And I'm optimistic that we will be able to finish our work on House File 141 before 2:15. I think we've got someplace else to go at that time, so I don't think we can continue past our appointed time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawick, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to see you, Mr. Chair. Glad you're back.
As we start going forward, I realize that we need to move the bill. At this time, I will move House File 141 for you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, House File 141 is really quite simple. It's less than a page long. What this bill does is it allows school districts to levy annually for up to $30 for transportation and up to $30 per pupil for technology. It is supported by the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation and also for the Schools for Equity. So as long as I say that, then they don't have to testify. Maybe, it might make it shorter. I brought with me the Director of Business for our District Director of Finance, Greg Hine, from 622 North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, and also the Director of Technology, Bob Biddick, to give sort of a real-world perspective on how an increase in the levy would affect our school district and perhaps affect all of yours. As you know, with the cuts and with things that have happened with the tight budgets in the past several years, this would be a significant way to affect funding and to actually help pupils in the classroom by funding transportation through a levy and as well as technology. So with that, I will ask them to say a few words.
Thank you. Who would like to begin?
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Greg Hine. I'm Director of Business for North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale Schools, and I would like to speak on the transportation component of Nora's bill. I won't go in the essence of time, I won't go into the lengthy history of transportation funding. A lot of you are probably familiar with that over time, but at times it has included a cost-based component. It has included some categorical funding in certain areas such as transportation safety and school bus purchasing. Several years ago, the funding was basically rolled into the general education formula, and the transportation fund was then also rolled into the general fund. If you go back and recreate, and a lot of districts, including ours, still keep track of transportation as a separate fund, as a separate funding, so that we can keep track and manage the costs a little bit better. If you go back and recalculate based on the old formulas what the current transportation revenue is, there's a pretty well-known, well-respected transportation consultant in the state. I'm sure a lot of you have heard of him, Tom Watson. He did a study some time ago indicating that almost all school districts are running the transportation fund at a deficit if you go back and compute the actual transportation revenue that would have been dedicated under the old formulas. That's a serious problem. Having it being rolled into the general fund, now it has to compete with all the other general fund funded items. You heard other testimony today, counselors, social workers, nurses, school teachers, classroom supplies. It makes it difficult when districts are in financial situations having to make budget reductions. One of the other aspects that's affected the transportation funding is in transportation of special education students. That funding, a lot of it is still a cost base, and it's funded out of the special education formula through base and aid and excess cost revenue. As you know, that funding, too, has been frozen, and special ed counts about 40% of our district's budget. And so when those costs continue to rise and the special ed formula is not picking up the excess cost, again, that burden falls on the transportation or the general fund. I did some calculations, and in terms of our district, the $30 we have about 13,000 pupil units, so that translates to $390,000. It happens to be a figure that's pretty close to what we need on an annual basis to fund our bus replacement cycle, absent the bus purchase levy or other funding mechanisms. Now, bus purchases has to compete against other capital needs out of the operating capital fund or out of other needs in the general fund. As part of our budget reductions this year, we are going to only replace one fewer bus than what we really need to keep our fleet current and safe. That's a short-term solution. So a funding mechanism like this that would help a dedicated source of funding for the transportation, particularly would help with that capital replacement cycle, would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Hine. Mr. Biddick, do you have something to add?
Yes, thank you. I would like to just talk a little bit about technology. I've been in the business of technology leadership for about 11 years, and funding has always been the struggle. And our goals have always been noble, and that is to have a up-to-date workstation in front of each student and every staff member for them to do the things that are what we deem critical in the world today. It's beginning to be even more of a challenge now than it was 11 years ago. We look at in our district, we have, as Greg mentioned, about 11,300 students in. I don't, people count as around 13,000. Dollars like what's proposed in this bill would be incredibly helpful for us trying to accomplish the things we need to do in technology. For example, right now we felt strongly about 4 years ago to put together a replacement cycle for technology. At that time, it was proposed by the District Technology Committee, and we fought hard to get some dollars to at least get it started. Our goal was to make it grow it and be more encompassing than what it is. But we started at $229,000. And that was that covered about 50% of our workstations, computers generally, in the district. But the sad thing is that's a 9.5-year recycle plan. Technology after 9.5 years is pretty much worthless. And we've struggled since that time to just to hold the dollars in the replacement cycle. A funding bill like this would be extremely helpful for our district if we could throw another $30 along with the presently $20 per student. We'd have $50 per student, and we'd be able to do one of two things. We could either extend the number of machines we have covered under existing replacement cycle, or we could bring that replacement cycle time cycle down to a reasonable level, down to about 3.5 to 4 years, which is really where we need to be. If we're expecting students to go out and use or learn how to use technology, do the things that you do in your daily work and other people do in their daily work, we really need to have computers that are capable of doing it. One of the problems that we encounter with older replacement cycles, like ours, 9.5 years, is that need for support. And it takes a drain on the district just to keep the machines running, keep the parts in them that make them work. But more importantly, I think if you ask our teachers what's most important for technology, number one they're going to tell you is a machine that'll do, a computer that'll do what they need it to do, and secondly, one that's reliable. And when you start having 9.5-year replacement cycles, you're not dealing with reliable computers anymore. You're dealing with machines that are up and down, and it doesn't encourage use. It discourages use. And so a bill like this would be very, very beneficial for our district, and I don't think we're unique at all in the state of Minnesota. I think we're pretty representative of most of the districts. Having some dollars for a replacement cycle or possibly for providing connections between buildings, connections to the Internet for support, would be very, very beneficial.
Thank you. Representative Diskins, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Slawick. As my question is to the mechanics of the bill, couldn't school districts already levy these amounts through referenda? And doesn't this bill actually then basically change it from levy by referenda to discretionary levy? And wouldn't it also have the effect then of lifting the cap for those districts that are currently levied to the cap?
Representative Slough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins, I served on this committee last year, and I'm still not an expert in school financing, but I will try to answer that the best I can. Yes, I think that's the intention, is that schools that are at the cap, and I'm not sure if we are, but would potentially be able to levy for these two items above that and not have to go and through a referendum to do that. So in essence, it would bring more money to the classroom because these dollars would go to fund transportation and technology, and those dollars in essence would be replaced, be able to go in the classroom, and these would be separately funded. Does that answer your question?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Initially, I think my question is for the gentleman focused on transportation issues. And as you may well know, around the state, with the tight budgets, a number of districts have curtailed their transportation. And last year, Eden Prairie was here actually asking to be able to charge students for transportation. The concern I have with the bill is, as state law and practice stands today, different students are treated differently with transportation. If you're a regular public school student, your district may only agree to transport you to perhaps the nearest school. If you're a private school or parochial school student, they may be willing to transport you further, including past other regular public schools. if you're a charter school student, they're required to transport you anywhere in the district. And so we're really treating different classes of students differently and undermining the option of school choice. And I guess from your perspective, do you think it's fair to treat different classes of students differently when it comes to transportation?
Mr. Hyde.
I don't. In fact, in our district, we've got a very strong... We formed a committee of actually of all our public schools and non-public or private schools within our district, and we're working jointly to try to create a more efficient system, look at some potential savings from combining of routes and things like that. But basically, we're not expecting... My understanding is that the law requires equal treatment. I mean, there's different definitions of that, but we treat them, and we wouldn't ask public, private school students to bear any different type of burden in terms of service than what our own public school students would do.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
I guess the question for the author then, would you be open if this bill were to move forward as an inclusion for some language that would condition it requiring that school districts providing transportation treat all students equally in terms of educational choice opportunities?
Representative Slava.
Mr. Chair, I think maybe I'm confused. Representative Dabney, you're advocating for more choice?
That's correct. I'm advocating for a level playing field so to expand families' opportunity for choice.
I think we could talk, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney,
I think we could talk about that. This is a very specific issue that's happening in our district where we are doing a lot of negotiating, and a lot of my neighbors happen to be very concerned about this at this point. They basically had to combine picking up some of the private schools with the public schools and students, and that's caused some issues in our district. So I would be open to that. I'd be interested to see how you would do that.
Mr. Chair, I'd look forward to having further discussions with you and Representative Swallow. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. We've got 3 minutes. Does anybody else have any questions or anything they want to talk about before we conclude? Minutes. First of all, we will lay over your bill, House File 141, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Sikora, you never get to move the minutes. Would you like to do this?
Mr. Chairman, I will move the minutes.
Thank you. Are there any corrections? Any other comments on the minutes? And with that, the interpretation. Do we have to vote? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are definitely improved. And with that, meeting's adjourned.